Good evening, everyone. Good evening. How's everyone doing today? I hope that everyone had a fantastic weekend. I hope everyone got enough rest. I hope everyone enjoyed holiday parties that they attended. I hope everyone had just a good time overall. So, in the building, we have the most talented, the most elegant, D-Rob.
I don't know why part of me was like, he's going to say someone else's name. But yes, I love the introduction. Hey, people.
And you know what? I was going to say my name.
I was waiting for it.
Yes, I was going to say my name. Okay, so next in the building to my right, we have the oh-so-smooth, oh-so-talented blogger, Breezy Taylor. Breezy T, what's up?
Nothing much. How you doing? It's Dr. J and
hey. D-Ball. How are you?
Do it again real quick.
Okay. Oh, goodness. So, this evening, folks, we're talking about discussing issues within the Black family, or the lack thereof. So, if you'd like to join us, you can call in at 760-683-2662 or hit us up on Twitter at amongst_friends, or you can join us on Periscope whenever we go Periscope Live at Amongst Friends. So, we're talking about discussing issues within the Black family, things that typically Black families don't talk about, things like homosexuality, finances, mental health issues, child molestation, you name it, we want to talk about it. We'd like to hear from you so that we can talk about more issues in depth. What are some of the things that you and your family are not talking about? And why aren't y'all talking about those issues? So we'd like to open up the conversation. We'd like to start, of course, within our building and just see what is going on, what's not going on in you all's family. So let's get the conversation started. So, D-Rob, what's up? What are some of the issues or some issues that have plagued your family before that have kind of been swept under the rug? And you know what? It don't even have to pertain to your family, but maybe a family in general that you know. What's up?
Seriously.
Well, here's the thing.
Here's the thing.
There may be or may not be certain situations that may have gone down in my family, but true to the conversation that we're having, there is still a part of me that says, I'm going to break the generational curse of those types of issues. Mm-hmm. And move forward that in my life, we're going to be open and honest about what may transpire. And let's leave what happened in the past in the past. Meaning, I don't know that I want to share my family's business. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's some true shit that's gone on. I'll tell you this. I've been molested. I've been raped 3 times.
I'm out.
Okay.
And I don't know that the family would want to sit down and relive it, or who is it and how did we not know, or would they even believe me?
I feel you. And okay, so when things transpired, did y'all actually sit down.
No. You let me tell you one the times that I was let's just talk about when I was raped.
Were you an adult or a
No, I was the first time, I think I was 13.
Oh wow.
And my mom worked late and you know, you hang out with the kids, you know, in the neighborhood or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And when it happened the first time, it was it's my fault.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my fault because if I would have done what my mom said and not been outside being a child, then this person wouldn't have had access to me.
So your mother just basically victim shamed you?
No.
Or what?
My mom does not know.
Well, whoever said it's your fault is
blaming
the victim.
I said it was my fault, which is why I didn't share. I felt like if I told my mom, I'd get in trouble.
Because I didn't do what she told me to do.
Gotcha. So as a result, it's my fault. So let me just take this one for the team.
Well, is that how you thought then or how you think now?
Well, that's how I thought. I mean, a part of me says, right now still says it's my fault. Because it's my fault.
But you know what? From my understanding, that is one of those things, just like lightning strike, you can't predict when it's going to happen.
Right.
You know, the majority of the people that I know of, it's been done by a close family member. So that person didn't have to be outside when they weren't supposed to. They didn't have to be doing something they weren't supposed to.
Right, and I get that, but that's not my situation.
I know.
I let someone in. That shouldn't have come in.
But
and I thought when I was younger, I was a lot, you know, I was a big girl, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, you have the whole impression of, you know, I'll be fine, you know what I'm saying? I can handle myself, you know, I can take care of things, you know? And so someone comes in, you know, I had three brothers and, you know, we've scruffed around, you know, I can handle myself. And to then be, I remember running up the steps and going into the bathroom and locking the door and him breaking into the door and me saying, no, we're not going to do this. And he's like, I do whatever the fuck I want to do. And me saying in my head, I can't tell anybody about this. Because I allowed him to come in.
You didn't even tell your mom.
No.
Oh.
You know, I take side of, I guess, the victim. No means no. Nothing that someone who has unfortunately been raped, nothing that person did to quit the situation. Nothing. No means no. You know, I don't care if you're wearing a shorter skirt. No means no. I don't care if you have five drinks. No means no. That does not give anybody the right, regardless if you let somebody in the house or not. That still should not have happened.
I hear what you're saying, but you're not the majority. The majority says, I mean, and you can have a female walk down the street and you get catcalls and you can hear the various stories of women who said, hey, I have a man or I'm not interested, and they're laden with, she's a, you know, bitch, you know, fuck you, you know, I didn't want your number, I didn't want, you know, you ain't all that anyway, you ain't this, you ain't that, ma, you sexy as fuck, look at that ass, you know, all this kind of stuff. If you just look at the day-to-day struggles that women go through, and all of what you just said is obsolete. People look and say, even on social media, we look at women who are scantily clad in their clothing, or the selfies on Instagram where women are showing their boobs, and both men and women are looking and saying to themselves, if not to their friends or in comments or in their little circles, they're saying, whatever she gets, she deserves, because she put herself out there.
I agree with what you just said. Obviously, those type of, for instance, those pictures are going to elicit a response. I do happen to think that you are sending a certain message. Having said that, regardless if you wore a burlap sack or whatever comments that you were sending, that does not give anybody, you know, the right to violate you.
I agree, hypothetically.
Right.
No, not hypothetically. I agree, period. Yeah. I mean, there's certain types of pictures that I see on social media, and I'll say, oh, my God, why would you do that? You know, why are you showing your ass?
Literally showing your ass.
You literally are showing your ass. I mean, that doesn't spell respect, or you're not trying to elicit respect. You're not trying. You're trying to elicit sex.
You're sending a message.
You're sending a type of message. But at the end of the day, I still don't feel that it's right to say, "Oh, yeah, she deserved that." Because no one actually deserves to be raped, because it's a horrible feeling. And
okay, but society says that when you have rape cases, okay, the burden of proof is on the victim. So in actuality, you're saying that my life doesn't matter. My choice, my yes or my no, it didn't matter because I'm having to prove it. And there are situations where women out there who do, you know, call out the rape situation, and that so wasn't the case because they have a hidden agenda.
You know, I'm not sure if anyone of you heard about the name of Brian.
Brian Banks.
Yeah.
Well, the girl who said that he had raped her, and then she came back and said, no, he didn't.
But didn't want to give back the money.
I don't feel like I should have to give the money back. So recently, recently, as a homeless shelter, I believe, in Kentucky, and a southern state.
Mm-hmm.
The director of this particular homeless shelter, who is a male,
mm-hmm.
basically kicked out all the women and children are homeless because the children were with the women. And he was saying, you know, because, you know, this is a homeless shelter, you know, he said, you know, women, you know, look to come in, you got to need somebody and get hooked up, and a lot of test cases are reported and STDs. So basically, what he's saying, he's trying to overcompensate for the men's lack of restraint. It's because the woman is there. Doesn't mean you have to talk to her.
Is this a real story?
Real story. No lie. I mean, no, he's not saying anything about rape cases. He's just saying that it's a lot of things going on, and that's not what this homeless shelter is used for. So he basically put all the blame on, well, the women are there. That's why things are going on. Not because the men can't.
Oh, my God.
Not try to holler at them. I mean, because obviously, now he's saying about rape, so I'm guessing the sex is consensual. But he's like, this is not what it's used for. This is for, it's a homeless shelter. And so he put all the blame on the women.
You've got to be kidding me.
Why am I?
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, go ahead with the story. That's just alarming. Okay.
And so, and going back to D-Rob, okay, just because a woman is there. I mean, you have to talk to her,
sure.
But don't sleep. You know, so I agree with you. You know, the burden of proof, unfortunately, you know, is put on the women. Unfortunately, there's maybe one or two that will lie. But that doesn't paint, you know, that doesn't paint like a broad stroke for all women. I still think there's nothing that you can say or do that is going to cause it. You know, if someone is really that, you know, that sadistic, they're going, if it was not you, it would be somebody else. Regardless if that person let the person in, or they see a person on the street, or in the movie theater. So it's nothing that anybody causes for that to happen to them. It's just some sick people out there. It really is just some bad people out there.
Okay. And what about when you're in a relationship?
Still, no means no. Now I know what back in the early days, I think
it's not in the early days, it's still.
No, but it's a law, like it was against the law for.
Go ahead.
What? Never mind, I don't have my laptop from this, I'm not gonna quit out bad, but I thought that it was legal, basically.
It is legal. So. If you're married, that's not constituted as rape.
Sex, yeah, you said if you're married, it constitutes, yeah, it is rape. That's true.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you asked me what I think. It is rape.
Some people think that, but there are people who believe that that when you're married, there's no such thing as rape.
That's what I'm saying.
And some people also believe that men can't get raped.
If you say no, male or woman, no means no.
True.
You know.
True. Even
but,
if you do have an erection.
You know what? I mean, that's like passing.
It's natural.
Yeah, I mean, it's like passing gas. It's a bodily function.
Right.
You can't. Right. You know, you can't help that. I remember leaving to Republican. You know, I think a couple years ago. You know, he was saying, well, you know, if a woman, you know, gets wet while she's being raped, it's not rape. Well, how ignorant of a statement.
Absolutely.
I've heard that.
You heard the same thing, if a woman gets wet, that she
mm-hmm.
wanted it?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay. So, mm-hmm. Go ahead.
The guy that I was dating, he was like, you enjoyed it.
So you all could join in the conversation?
Yeah, absolutely. 760-683-2662. I would definitely like to hear from you all. It's a very interesting topic. We're talking about discussing things within the Black family or the lack thereof. So give us a call or go to our Facebook page, Amongst Friends, or hit us up on Twitter, Amongst_Friends, or join us on Periscope after the show at Amongst Friends.
FYI, marital rape is today illegal in all 50 USA, United States.
Mm.
The criminalization of marital rape in the United States started in the mid-1970s.
Yeah, that's recent. That's still recent.
And by 1993, which was prior to, so prior to me, prior to my situation.
Right.
Marital rape became a crime in all 50 states. 93.
That's just.
I graduated high school in 94.
Yeah, that's yesterday. 93.
And it's under at least one section of the sexual offense code. But during the 1990s, most states differentiated between the way marital rape and non-marital rape were treated. So again, he said, because I enjoyed it. It wasn't considered rape.
He's a dumbass. What are we?
None of these men, as of late. This was one. This was before I was 17.
Oh.
All of my situations happened before I left high school.
Oh, wow. And, well, did you tell anybody?
I mean, I tell people now.
No, like after it happened, like
family
members?
Hell no.
What?
Why would I do that?
Why wouldn't you?
What would it solve? What would happen?
Well, first of all,
it gives you another outlet to talk about.
It gives you an outlet.
What?
It's kissing with your family.
Not only that, not only does it give you an outlet to talk about it, but if they did it to you, they're going to do it again. So that can prevent other girls, young ladies, from becoming rape victims as well.
Both of the people who did their
stalking.
Bidding
say
to me,
stalking.
Both are dead. And so I figured.
Well, that's all the more reason to talk about it.
I figured that that was God saying to me, it's not your battle to fight, not taking care of it.
But I get that, but be able to talk to your mother about anything. I think that, you know, as a couple were telling me this, I believe that, you know, being a parent is a thankless job. And I believe that, you know, you should, whether you actually do or not, you should be able to talk to your child or your parent about anything. And if it's something that you can't share, wouldn't it, like, create some type of, like, burden? Like, you
My
know?
Mom was taking care of four kids, and she was working two jobs.
But now...
Why would I put that on her? Would she say, like, baby, I'm so sorry?
Because that's your mom.
That's your
and
mother.
That's what she's supposed to... That's what okay. she's there for.
I'm good.
No. And see, that's why we're talking about the topic today, because I feel as though my child can come to me and talk to me about anything. My nine-year-old, sometimes I do random checks on him, you know, because I do realize that we are both busy parents, and you know, my child is in Taekwondo, so I don't know what goes on, you know, from 2 to 6 p.m. at Taekwondo. But my child, he's going to tell it. My 9-year-old, he'll tell it. That's their job. That's what they're there for. You know, I don't care how many jobs I work, how many advanced degrees I try to go get, or, you know, what am I doing in the community or at church or different things like that. My child has that type of obligation. I make sure that I still have those open lines of communication with my child, because that's my job as a parent. My first priority is to protect my child, my children.
I hear you. And like I started out the conversation with, going forward for me and my children, or me and my girlfriends and whatever extended family, my nieces, my nephews, mm-hmm. let's talk. Let's get you counseling. Let's do something mm-hmm. about it so that it doesn't happen again. But me going back and revisiting and having this conversation with my mom, what's the purpose?
To talk.
To talk what?
What is
she going to do now?
So that she can understand.
Understand what exactly?
How you're feeling. And
about what exactly? I'm living my life. It hasn't hurt me. I've gone to counseling. I did this on my own as an adult. There is absolutely nothing my mom can do. So you want me to go back and say, Mom, this is what happened, so that she can be like, oh my gosh, I feel so bad. Why would I do that?
Sometimes you just need a mother's...
To listen.
Just a mother, period. To be completely honest, that's the only thing that I fear with my two kids, because they don't have that motherly role in their lives. So sometimes you just want your mom.
Okay, I agree.
And
but I can still have that now without having to... put that on her so that she, I don't want my mom going to her grave feeling like, oh my gosh, I allowed this to happen to my child. I'm good. Do I talk about it? Absolutely.
Okay, so she knows now, though.
She knows. I've shared it. And I think it was because I was sharing it on the radio. Or I was maybe sharing it in a ministry conversation that we were having. But it's not something that she and I sat down and I said, listen, this is what happened. Because anytime you have those conversations, whether you like it or not, people are going to feel like somebody has to establish fault.
Okay. Okay. So now whenever you do talk to your nieces and other family members, you are transparent with them and saying, hey, this is what happened to me, blah, 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 X, Y, and Z.
About rape, yeah.
Okay. That's
all you can do at this point.
I mean, but my thing is, I mean, even with the conversation, why are we having these conversations?
Why are we?
Yeah, why are we having them?
So that the generations don't continue. So that it, because to me, it's like a generational curse. I don't want to continue the generational curse. I don't want to continue the norm.
Okay,
you
I
know,
can make a decision.
And you can make a decision. However, I just don't want to continue with the lack of communication, you know, because we black folks, we've been going on for years with not talking about certain things.
Okay, and you also know in the black community, we're just not going to talk about things. As progressive as our generation.
Then we're not progressive.
No, I'm saying as progressive as we are in our, thoughts and wanting to be better for our kids and for generations to come, sometimes you just have to leave it alone and say, I can't deal with this. I can't deal with the mindset. I just can't.
Then how progressive are we?
Then I have to move forward and have a different conversation moving forward.
Then how progressive are we?
Doing pretty damn well.
No, we're not.
I'm doing pretty damn well.
No, we're not progressive. We portray to be all, you know, progressive. But realistically, we're not then, and we're afraid to still have these types of conversations with our families.
I don't think that it's we're afraid. It's just like, what's the point, though?
And there we go. So that the generation don't here's the thing, and I always revert things back to ministry. You go through things. Oh, my gosh, the pastor just talked about this today, too. You go through things. So, and you go through things, and it becomes your testimony so that you can continue to help people, so that you can help people who are coming up along the way, who feel the same thing that you felt back then, oh, it's my fault. So you took, unfortunately, we go through different types of experiences, and we're hurt, and we're ashamed in the process, but the bigger picture is, it's for our own good, but the bigger picture is it's for someone else. And I always revert back to this story where I was leaving my husband. I was literally leaving him, had my bags packed. I'd stolen his truck to take my bags. Yeah, he was at work. I took his truck.
Wait, you're talking about you?
Yes.
Dr. J. You
me
were leaving your
husband. I was leaving him. He had life fucked up, and he had me fucked up with it. So I'm driving. He's at work. I got off work early. I came home. I packed bags. I got in his truck, and I left. I was going on my way to go sign my lease. I was already staying in a hotel for the past 3 days, found me an apartment, go on my way to go sign my lease. And as I'm almost there and I'm driving and I'm listening to Keisha Cole and, you know, crying and snotting on the way,
oh, wow.
God said, turned around. I'm like, who are you talking to?
He's not talking to me.
I'm going to continue to drive. He says, Kobe, turn around. Me? No. He fucked up. And something wrong with you, too. I'm gone. I'm out this bitch. There's nothing you can tell me to make me turn around, turn this truck around. I'm not doing that. I'm about to go sign my lease. I already put down a little deposit. I got people coming to move me in next week. I'm not doing that. Nope. Well, I stopped, pulled over, had a conversation with the Lord, and he told me your marriage is much, much bigger than you. We had a come to Jesus moment because I literally had to cry. And I turned around, and me and my husband, we started going to counseling, which is another taboo black people don't believe in and afraid to talk about.
But you do realize that there's reason for that. Typically, back in the day, when people had issues,
mm-hmm.
people were admitted to the crazy house. So, and then on top of being sent to the crazy house, you would forever have a record showing that you were unstable mentally.
You know,
why would I go?
No, but that may be a reason. But why I think another reason is no one wants to admit that there's cracks. Everybody wants to put up this front like we're perfect, everything's
mm-hmm.
fine, nothing
no.
we can't get through.
No, I mean, even in talking in your individual family, y'all all know y'all got issues. Everybody knows about.
No.
It ain't that we don't admit to them because we talk about the BS that goes on in the family. It's just that's not Jacoby's business. That's not your business. This is family business. We'll deal with our business within our family. So we recognize it, and there are certain things that we do to combat the BS.
Right, and also we don't want no one else to know
right.
that we have these issues, which is what I said.
Right. I don't think we have a problem saying that there are issues. It's just we have to fix the issues. I don't need to publicize it or put it on paper or on record for anybody to know
okay.
that we have issues.
Okay, so how are you fixing the issues? As a black family, how are you fixing the issues? Are you going to counseling? Because I grew up with this, oh, we just going to pray about it. No.
You're going to pray it away.
You're going to pray it away. You're sweeping it under the rug is what you're doing. I mean, granted, prayer is the ultimate thing you should do. Everyone should pray. However, God also put these other solutions
mm-hmm.
in place where people can tap into and say, hey, utilize these solutions. Go to counseling. There's nothing wrong with counseling. I go to counseling. My husband goes to counseling. We go to counseling separately, and then we go as a couple. And trust me, between God and my counselor, the only thing that saved my marriage because I was out. So how are you fixing these problems? How are you fixing things? You know, people always say, oh, I'm going to pray about it. What else? Because these are other things that black people just aren't doing because it's so taboo.
Right.
So if you want to join us, the conversation, you can join us at 760-683-2662. So, and we're talking about discussing things within the black family or the lack thereof. Let's talk about finances. Are black people, I hate using that word. Are we discussing finances in the African-American community or in the black families? Are we even doing those things? I know my family, we particularly didn't. I knew we were broke growing up. I already knew that. There wasn't anything that anybody had to tell me. I grew up in a two-bedroom, single-wide trailer growing up. Are you laughing at me, D-Rob?
In my head, because you know I always have shit to say.
Really? What do you
mean? You really are trailer trash.
Shame.
It has been proven.
Oh, you tried it.
You say it is thick.
Okay.
Oh my goodness. You tried it.
Just a little.
Oh, wow.
Just a little. I mean, immediately what I
That's
thought.
Immediately what you thought?
I mean, when you said it, but that was just people. It's all comic relief.
That's what we do. Don't say some of the things that we say seriously.
I mean, some you do.
Right.
Some you
but
don't.
This particular statement.
You had to get that one in.
I did. It was just sitting there like, really?
I didn't say
really?
That.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. You should have. When he said, "I stayed in a two-bedroom trailer."
I was trying to picture like the trailer, like.
Okay, so first of all, from the South, don't get it twisted. Some of these double wide trailers is the business.
You know, they're called modules now, and they look nice.
They do.
Yeah, the
I'll be honest. My mom had bought some land, and she was gonna get her a double wide. And I was saying in my head, Lord, I don't want to stay in a trailer. But hey, if that's what she wanted, that's what we was gonna do. Because I saw some nice ones.
Okay. Well, first of all,
it wasn't.
My parents married in 1984, and we stayed in that little single wide trailer from 1984 until 1993, and it was already land that my dad purchased already. My dad had purchased a lot of land, because you can get a lot of land for dirt cheap, especially back in the 80s. But the trailer itself was like a 1970 single wide trailer, two bedroom. Me and my little sister shared a room, and the room is probably the size of the kitchen, right? Yeah. Probably size of the kitchen, or a little smaller. We had bunk beds and one drawer in it, and me and my sister shared a closet and a drawer. So then when my mom took in my cousin, her nephew, who was older than me and him slept in the top bunk. He was in high school, I was in middle school. So then, once my mom went back to school, got herself together, and started making more money, then we bought one of the nicer double-wide trailers and put it on the same land.
Oh, so y'all stayed in trailers. Y'all didn't move. Y'all didn't move to a house.
Nope.
Move from one trailer to another trailer.
We moved from, and we bought it brand new. This one was brand new. Couldn't tell us nothing. It was the biggest trailer on the block, so you couldn't tell us nothing. So we, you laughing at me, Breezy?
No.
What are you laughing at, Breezy?
Nothing.
So yeah, that's how I grew up, and like I said, I knew we were broke, and you know, we lived hood rich. After my mom graduated from college and got herself a job, because before we got our house, she bought a car, a brand new car.
With a quarter of gas left?
Right. She bought a brand new, the Toyota Camrys was just coming out. Like in 93, that new body style was just coming out.
Yeah.
She bought a car before she bought a house, so... She was parking that brand new Camry at that single wide trailer.
On the dirt road?
On the dirt road, yes. We lived on a dirt road.
I can see you now.
We did. So.
I
can't.
I got a quarter second gas.
New E class. But that's all right.
Nah, I tell you, my experiences with finances was, it was kind of like the shady side. So my grandfather, my father's father, you know, took on the South, you know, worked in industrial, career, and eventually died, and came out that where he worked at, the plant had asbestos.
Asbestos, okay.
Yeah, so a lot of people that had family members that worked for this company sued the company,
right?
And won.
Right.
Well, you know how it is with some black folks, and you start winning money.
Yeah.
So, my father, who was the oldest boy, and probably the, I don't say the most responsible guy, but a couple of aunts that are responsible. But my father was, given control of the money, just because he knew. Like you said, buying a car before you buy a house. And
right.
And I had a couple of uncles that, another taboo, that had substance abuse problems. So they would probably, you know, drink it or smoke it up. Something like
right,
that.
Absolutely.
You know, and so I just seen that. You know, when my father, you know, did, you know, gave the siblings the checks, it'd be gone. We'll cut you alone.
Really?
Yeah, because
it'd be
gone when? No, I was saying like my father was, what do you call it? Not the executor, but the trustee.
No, you said, I'm talking about how long the money would last.
Oh, well, like I said, cause I had a couple, you know, aunts and uncles that had substance abuse problems. So
mm-hmm.
as soon as they would get, you know, that much check,
mm-hmm.
of course, it would be, you know, not grammatically correct, but drunked up or smoked up or, you know, and then, of course, you pay it alone. So I seen, like, the real shadiness, and my father was like, you know, well, I just gave you your check. I can't go, fucking brother, you ain't my brother, it's the other.
Now let me ask you this: did your family like come together and like try to have an intervention with like your uncles?
Well, you know, again, that's that taboo. You know, man, you know, so and so, you know, he on that stuff.
Right.
You know, of course, I'm not sure that if all of them sat down together in the group and had an intervention,
like,
but
like,
I don't know if that actually happened. I know, you know, because my father, you know, would talk to his brothers. He loves his brothers.
Right.
You know, he's not withholding the money because he wants the money. He just knows as soon as they get it all, it'll be gone within 6 months to a year. So
define how much money we're talking about.
I don't know. I was young at the time.
Okay.
But I remember, you know, then they would call the house and I answered the phone. They'll try to get to him for me. We'll tell your father, you know what I'm saying? You know, try to give me the butt of my father.
Oh, okay. Got it. Okay. I understand.
So, yeah, so, I you know, for finances, I've seen the shady side of family.
Right.
And money.
And speaking of money and being shady, did y'all parents teach y'all about money? Mine didn't. Like, did your parents sit down with you? Now, one thing that my parents did do was, and I saw them do this, was they sat down at the table together and they did their bills and, you know, different things like that. Now, that I did see, and that's something that I actually do. But did they actually sit down and tell me, hey, this is how you budget, you need to save this amount, you need to pay this toward, you know, you need to, only a fraction of your check should be for living and different things like that. Did they do that with y'all? Mine didn't.
No, I didn't get that. I know both my parents. No, let's play everything 50-50. So I know I would see my mom at the table, you know, calculating the month's bills and mortgage, whatever. I would see that. As far as what I was told, basically, this is my father's conversation about credit. If you owe somebody something, give it back. That way you can always go back and get it from them again. That was it. I mean, that's a simplistic, you know, conversations of no credit, but it's true. If you do owe somebody something, give it back. You know, you don't have any outstanding, you know, no debts or anything. And that's basically, like I said, that's very simplistic, but it makes sense. But that was it. Of course, you know, say as much as you can, be responsible. That was it. That was the extent of mine.
That was good right there.
I got nothing.
Damn.
I mean, but
not save for a rainy day or anything like that?
Mm-mm. No. But what I did get.
Okay, you got something, okay.
My mom was very hardworking.
Okay.
Like I said, my mom has four kids.
And you say she was working two jobs.
She was working two jobs. She was never on any type of state assistance.
Good.
Ever. And then when we would try to get into those little programs,
mm-hmm.
she made entirely too much money. And
because
we got whatever we wanted. There was no, I mean, it wasn't until I was leaving high school that I really understood that we ain't got no money. You know what I'm saying? Because she always took care of it.
Right.
I mean, I had the new clothes, I had the new kicks, you know what I'm saying? And then if I didn't have new kicks, my mom was awesome because she would also sew clothes, you know, and
thrifty.
I've never been, no.
Oh, okay.
My mom, like, name brand. Okay?
Hood rich, again.
My mom loves name brand things.
Buy a car before you buy a house kind of thing. Okay.
Yeah. That's what my mom did. She bought a new car before we moved out of the single wide trailer.
Because I may mention this before, my family's from Alabama. So that scenario you just imagine, I imagine me getting out of my car going to my car. I've seen that scenario so many times, so I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing because I actually seen this picture before.
Right.
I've seen this movie before.
That's like people buying in our today's generation, because I don't know how many people in my generation are buying double wides these days. I don't know. But in our generation, it'll be like buying an E-Class Benz.
And when you're in an apartment.
How about
with today's economy, I would prefer to be in an apartment.
Really? Why?
Responsibilities of a house.
Right.
A single family house.
Right.
Am I now going to work on my house?
You're going to purchase a home for the investment.
Okay.
That investment costs money.
From the car. Yeah, but I get to spend time in my car.
You're going to spend less time in the car than you would the house.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. You're going to drive the car to work, school, maybe if you go out of town. But home?
Who want to cut grass?
You don't have to.
Who want to fix the potholes in the yard? Who wants to fix the roof that may be leaking? It may be our own house.
The basement floods.
You know,
it needs repairing.
Nothing's perfect. You buy a car, it's going to break down. You only need this and this done.
No,
so
I think
you buy a house.
Can get a new one.
But
no one's going to want a used car that's broke down.
You're going to be getting tires all the time. You're going to there's certain
oil things changes and things like that, brakes and that.
Yeah.
So, like, with my family, both my parents come from Mobile, Alabama. Maybe like 150,000, maybe 200 people live in Mobile. They both come from families of 11, and that two bedroom house, five kids at the top of the bed, four at the bottom of the bed. So I mean, they definitely. Well, I didn't get a very extensive financial talk. My parents are definitely, financially responsible. And I guess, going on broken, smelling your brother's feet in your nose for the first 8 years of your life would do that to you.
Right.
When I came along, obviously, they were much better off than when they were growing up. My father had been in the Air Force and military for about 5 or 6 years by this time. My mother had been in banking. So, I mean, even by osmosis, I'm going to learn something about finances anyway to my mother. So, I grew up in, a middle class, black.
Privileged.
Well, there's no such thing as middle class anymore
now. You
didn't grow
up in a two-bedroom trailer.
but I did grow up in a, middle class, working class, black neighborhood, so.
You get grow up in a two-bedroom trailer.
Let it go, Brother Jay. Let it go.
So you said through osmosis. So, but you never got to sit down and talk saying, hey, son, you're going to be growing up. You're going to be moved out of the house soon. You're going to incur some bills, different things like that. I'm going to have to teach you about credit. It's like, well, you already said how you
right. Yeah. Like actually now my mother, who has been a lifelong banker, like she's actually made, like, I don't have a credit card. I never had a credit card. And for someone who has worked in banking her whole life, she's like, I wish that that she was like that. My mom has had a credit card. I've never had a credit card.
I've never had like a real credit card that I actually.
I've never had a credit card, period. Nothing. Not the ones you get in school when you go up to college. I've never had a credit card.
No, I'm talking about I didn't have those. The only credit cards I had in my name was the ones that my mom got and started using, and then the one that my ex-best friend got in my name and started using. So I, in particularly, did not get a credit card at all, like, to use. From the only kind of credit cards I ever received was, like, a secured credit card through the bank. Or something like that.
Not that. You know, I hear people, I want to pay off my credit card bill. I'm just thinking, like, I've never had to deal with that.
Yeah. Be thankful.
Are you looking at it like that, D-Rob?
Okay.
What about you, D-Rob?
What about me?
Talk about credit card debt. What about you? Credit card debt.
I have some.
Okay. What's some? Define some.
Do you have more than one card?
I have two.
Okay. Have you always had two, or, you know, you've had these cards for
years?
I've
had six.
At one time or total?
At one time. Jeez. And then I brought it down to three. Mm-hmm. And then I brought it down to two. And I'm going to get one more. I'm going to go back to three.
Okay. You just paid off and just... close out the account, which you can actually never do, by the way.
Right, you never close out the account.
Right.
I took a hit.
Why is that?
I went down almost 80 points.
Oh my God.
When I closed my account.
No.
I did.
So you're penalized.
Yes.
When you close the account. Yes. You are penalized when you close the account.
That's a damn mafia, man.
Yeah. You're supposed to keep it open just to have open credit.
Right. And it needs to stay above 50%.
Right.
That's a damn mafia.
Yeah. Pretty much. Pretty much. So, things like that, we weren't taught. And I'm just going to assume that, I know my parents didn't teach it to me because they weren't taught. But, no. Then again, just because you weren't taught something growing up doesn't mean that you can't teach your kids. Because I teach my kids. You know, finances and things like that. Well, something that they can handle now. Like my 16-year-old, we're just talking about saving money. That's it. Okay, you get your allowance. You need to do your 10% in church. And then, you know, the rest, you know, this is what you need to do. So we're on that level. We're not talking about credit and different things like that. That'll be his senior year in high school, you know, when we talk about things like that.
You know, and like
why?
I said.
Why?
Yeah.
Because by the time he's a senior in high school, that's when he's going to start establishing credit. He'll be 18. And the first thing that I want to do, and then I learned this from white people.
By art.
The first thing I'm going to do is actually take him down to the bank and give him a secured credit card so he can start building credit. Then a few months after that, he'll have his own cell phone in his own name. You know, that'll be his bill that he'll pay. Not me anymore. He'll be off of my bill.
Why?
Why what?
Why?
Why?
What?
He'll be off my bill?
Mm-hmm.
Because
it's costing a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
It's costing a lot of money.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. 16-year-olds cost. So,
are you going to put him out when he's 18 too?
No, not at all. He's going to go to college. He's going to college and.
He's going to be on his own, basically.
Pretty much. But, you know, when he. Holidays and the summer breaks, things like that.
What
be
about
home
when he graduates?
From college? He's going to military. He's already decided that. He's already decided that. If it was up to him, he would be doing the military after he graduates high school.
You know what? Actually, you can join.
Why?
You can do basic training.
Well, we're doing what we're going to do is have him. Well, if he wants to do.
We're going to college first.
No, what he wants to do is go into the either the reserves or the National Guard when he's in high school. That's what he wants to do. So
well,
next year,
plan, so.
Yeah. Next year, that's what we're taking him down there to do. It's to join it's either the Guard or the reserves. I can't remember which one he said he wanted to join. And then after he graduates from high school, he wants to go to college but still be in the reserves or the guard. And then after college, he'll go into straight active duty. So,
Why not straight after high school?
We don't want him to do that now with the kids.
Hmm?
That's something that he wants to do. He wants to come in as a, he wants to go in active duty. When he goes active duty, he wants to go in as an officer. I thought. And I was like, hell no. Hell no. So, yeah, he wants to go, when he goes active duty, he wants to go in as an officer. Because those, the jobs as an officer versus enlisted, two totally different
things. Has he already taken the ASVAB?
I know he hasn't taken the ASVAB yet. He's studying for it, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's in 10th grade right now.
So you don't take it to your junior. I know when I was high school, he was junior and senior mm-hmm. anyway.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, yeah, he has it. He pretty much has it planned out. He pretty much has it planned. Are you okay over there, honey?
Mm-hmm.
You don't eat the whole thing. I'm going to be so disturbed if you eat that whole thing tonight. I'm going to be really disturbed. And by the way, no thank you. I don't want a slice. No thank you. I'm good. Yeah, no thank you. I'm good.
For your information, I was going to offer.
Yeah, but half the damn thing is gone already.
Because it's mine.
Jesus.
Just saying,
half the damn thing is gone.
It's mine.
You know, we teach our children to share.
Mm-mm. Sharing's overrated.
Share alike.
That's the problem with the world.
That's the problem sharing. With black people. We don't share and we don't talk about shit. That's our problem.
Don't talk about shit.
Only thing black people can have an honest conversation about these days is sports. That's it.
And
that's all.
I agree.
Well,
I'm a sports fan, so.
And speaking of black people not talking about things, were y'all educated? I don't want to fly. I really don't.
You just make me feel guilty.
Yeah, I just want to make you feel like shit.
But guess what? I don't.
Anyway. Were y'all given the talk about sex?
No.
No, not at all.
Oh
this is what I was told, and I made it just before. I've been 6'2 since I was 16. My dad was like, 6'2, women like tall men. If you have sex, wrap it up. That was it. That was a whole birds and bees.
He didn't show you how to put on a condom?
In a matter of 30 seconds. That was it.
He didn't show you how to put on a condom?
Mm-mm. I'm 36 now. Still haven't had a talk.
Still ain't had a talk.
Yeah. You're 6'2". Women like tall men. If you have sex, wrap it up.
Hey, babe.
So I can't.
Yeah, that was it.
Oh. Okay. You said no, not at all?
Not at all.
Oh. I was told to wait until I got married.
Well.
That was it.
I wasn't even told that.
Well, here's the thing. My mom told me I should wait till I got married. My dad said, you need to be out there screwing.
Okay.
Those weren't his exact words, but pretty much, he was like, you need to be out there screwing. But that was before he figured out that I was gay.
Yeah, but I was
gay. Yeah, that was when he thought I was, you know, all into girls and different things like that.
Okay. So then, we didn't have the birds and the bees conversation, but I grew up strictly in the church.
Absolutely.
So, of course, missionary back there.
Yes.
Yes. We went to conferences and everything. I was a princess.
Did y'all have a building fund?
Yes, we did.
Wait, no. For 20 years.
Right. Ain't put even door knob
in
the church.
No, we didn't have a building fund because my grandfather was a carpenter, and he also... he built houses, so my grandfather built the church. So we didn't have a building.
Your grandfather was the pastor?
No, he was one of the senior deacons.
Oh.
Was he a founder member?
He was on the deacon board and the finance committee.
Of course.
Finance committee.
Of course.
He was one of the leaders in our community, but we didn't have a building.
Pillar, that's right.
He was a pillar.
He was.
Deacon.
Yeah.
Pillar.
The first name of the church is missionary.
This one here. But we were taught that we were to save ourselves for marriage.
If not, would you go to hell?
Not that we would go to hell per se. But Jesus would not be pleased.
And
that was it.
Okay. So
it wasn't until I was 19 and I went to a sex store with my mom, and she was just like, I can't do this with you.
Really?
You went with her or she went with you?
She went with me. And my aunt.
I want to hear this story.
My aunt was doing some stuff and I was like, aunt! Well, I'm not going to say her name, but I used my aunt's name and I was like, oh my God, I don't want to have this conversation. I feel weird. Even to this day, me and my mom won't.
Your aunt was a freak.
Huh?
Your aunt was a freak.
Well, she may or she may not be.
People know which army you're talking about.
They do. They do. They do. They do. They do. Shout out to Aunt.
We already know.
Anywho, but even to this day, like, I just recently, this year, told my mom that I'm having sex. Like, had a conversation and said I'm having sex. But that's because I was actively trying to have a baby, and I was like, this is what's going to happen. And she was like, are y'all going to go to the doctor? And I was like, no, he's going to come over, and we're going to have sex. And she was like,
fortune your mother.
And she was like, okay, I'm getting off the phone now.
You know what else?
And I was like, Mom, guess what? I'm going to see such and such, and we're going to have sex.
You know what? You're in the butthole.
And so now when I say, hey, I'm going to see such and such, she'll be like, okay, I'm going to let you go.
See, it's different for me. My parents assumed, after 19, assumed I was having sex. I'm okay, can you have sex? No, I ain't say yeah. No, I was like, why are you asking? I just brushed it off. Yeah, no. My parents, I assumed.
How old were you before you lost your virginity?
I was 14.
Okay.
I was 14.
Am I right?
Yeah. I was, I ain't gonna go into details for you guys.
Oh, no, I'm laughing. I don't want to know details.
No, no, so I was in Hawaii. It happened on the football bleachers during school assembly.
Crazy is a freak.
Yeah, me and Veronica Garcia.
You call
me?
Oh,
y'all be bringing
that in,
man.
Wait a minute.
No, that's not real, man. That's an inside joke because she's Puerto Rican, so I like, you know, just,
oh, okay.
You know, that's an inside, no, we're not. Even it was, that was 22 years ago.
It doesn't matter.
No, but that's an inside joke.
You don't understand. When girls have the reputation, they always have that reputation.
Yeah, no, so that was an inside joke just because she's Puerto Rican.
Because I'm still a good girl. I mean, considering y'all, what, maybe two or three shows ago, I was a prude.
You are prude. So.
No. See, just because you're having sex, you're a prude sexually.
You don't know that, boy. You ain't never been in my bed.
Mother J told us you're a prude.
You're a prude.
You ain't been in my bed either.
Your definition of freaky is doing it on the floor.
Right.
No, my definition of freaky is not doing it on the floor.
It's on the floor.
Yeah, that's it.
I don't know who you're talking about, but you're not talking about me.
That's not the foreplay in my house.
That's what I'm talking about. High five. We start on the floor and we start every place else.
Oh,
yes.
Anyway. So, yeah, I got taught by my mom, wait till you're married.
She was a whore.
I was getting in at 13.
Yeah, he was a whore. Mm. I mean, like,
we was going to the homework program. They had a homework program on
Hold on.
He pimping.
So when I was in middle school, I was 13. I was always, I was tall, and I was solid. And so my parents sent me and my sister to this after school homework program back in the day. So what would happen is I would go to the after school program, and the after school program was on a college campus. It was on, back then it was called Claflin College, which is now Claflin University. Well, anyone from South Carolina or Orangeburg, South Carolina, knows that Claflin sits right next door to South Carolina State University. Bulldogs. The only thing that divides the school is a gate. Back then, and it was a fence just the iron fence. So years ago, students had tore a hole through the fence so that you wouldn't have to walk over the street to go to state. You just go in through the gate.
Mm-hmm.
You just crawl under the gate. So
you were crawling through the
gate. Right, because the
fast.
Mm-hmm. Right, because one of the college students conducted the program. They were the ones who helped us middle school kids with the program.
You are having relations with college age people in middle
school. Well, my first time, never forget it. Maze 2.
Maze 2.
That's the name of the dormitory on South Carolina State Campus.
Oh my God.
That's the name of the dormitory on South Carolina State.
It is.
That's statutory rape.
So could you please not be airing out the school's business?
Okay.
They could be held liable for that.
Have the school investigate.
Okay. So, anywho,
what's the statute of limitation on?
It's 10 years. I'm 34. That happened when I was 13. I'm well above the statute.
I was statutorily raped.
But is it? Anyway, that's just my hold on. So I met him. He was one of the tutors.
Jesus!
But he went to state. So state was the party school.
Oh my God!
So I was very flirty, and like I said, I had size on me, so no one really knew what my age was. So he might have thought I was 15 or 16. He was 19, but I was really 13. We were still both in our teens. So. That's what I said in my mind to justify it.
This is how people get raped.
And I lied to him and told him that.
Okay. Well,
no. I didn't want to get raped. I wanted the dick.
Wait.
So I wanted to have sex.
Consensually,
yes. So it wasn't, you can't rape the willing over here.
And this is why people say if you enjoyed it.
No. I wanted it.
No, but what I'm saying is you enjoyed it. Your body reacted to it.
Yes.
So you wanted it.
Yes.
But this is listening what I'm saying.
Uh-huh.
Men who say to women, your body reacted to it.
Mm-hmm.
So you enjoyed it because you truly wanted it.
That's what men say, but what I'm saying is when I first saw him,
mm-hmm.
I said I wanted it. When I first saw him, there was no, no, I don't want it. I can't go back. No, I wanted it. The next time we come back to this homework program, I'm going to see what it's all about. I wanted it. So I lied to him and told him, yeah, I was already having sex, which really I wasn't. I was a virgin.
My Lord.
So I wanted it. So during our studies, I finished my homework early at school. I finished my homework early at school so that when I got to the homework program, I would have ample amount of time to go to Maze 2 and get it in. Don't let me talk.
Goddamn Jesus, help us.
So we got it in. We got it in. So
now people gonna be trying to go to state because that's where they get in.
So we got it in, and that type of relationship lasted until I was 25.
My God, what the hell?
With him.
Okay.
Well, I was 25 when we.
Wait. From 13 to 25?
And I'm talking about after he graduated, he moved states away. And whenever South Carolina State had a homecoming or his fraternity had a function or something like that, whenever he would come back to state, he'll send an old thought phone call out. Hey, what's up? What you doing? Mind you, I was still in high school when he graduated.
Never figure out how old you were.
Now he does, because we're still cool.
I'm just saying,
with each other.
Yeah.
He didn't. Oh.
You ain't made
I had to tell him the truth when I turned about 15. I had to tell him the truth because by this time he wanted me to fly different places. Because he kind of figured, oh, well, you're in college and different things like that. And y'all, that I worked so I could stay out late anyway because I worked a job. I worked at Bojangles and I worked at Shoney's. So I would close. So, and I was in high school closing, which you could do back then. I don't think you do it now. But it made it possible. And not only that, I was always on Claflin or State's campus. Because I always had older friends who would be on campus who had a dorm room. So we would just chill out there, you know, smoke, different things like that.
So we smoke, too?
I smoke weed. I smoke weed.
Just true trailer trash.
I know how to roll a blunt. I know how to roll.
Question. What else? Zigzags. Swishes.
Swisher seeds.
Okay.
I like the smell.
Black and Mild?
Yeah.
Easy Rivals?
No, I don't like the Black and Mild. Are you okay, Rob?
Come on, sit back.
Sit back down. What's wrong? Oh. You okay?
Okay.
I mean, we're cool friends. He's married to a woman nowadays. Yeah.
Okay, so now is he bisexual or is he
still consider him bisexual?
What does he consider himself to be?
He considers himself to be straight. I consider him to be bisexual because even to this day, like, I'm 34. I've had the same telephone number since I was 20. I'm 30. Yes, 14 years. I've had the same telephone number since I was 20. So he already knows this number works. This is a good number for me. You know, we're not even Facebook friends or anything like that. We don't do any type of social media or anything like that. And so the last time I've actually heard from him was right after I met my husband, and me and my husband were just dating, and he was like, hey, can I come to Texas, because he lives states away still, so he would fly to come, you know, come see me, because I was the only guy that he was dealing with.
My vagina has never done
it. Your vagina has never done what?
Never had people hop a flight.
Shut the front door. I hop a flight to go come see my husband. You never had somebody come fly
never,
to come get it.
Never.
Stop playing.
I swear to God.
Really?
Never.
You've never hopped a flight out of there?
Not for no pee.
Really? No. Really? Have you hopped a flight to come see somebody for something?
I've had vagina fly to me.
Right.
I've never experienced anything.
Really? You poor thing.
I know.
Yeah.
You poor thing.
Yeah, I've had vagina buy a ticket to come see me.
Oh, God. I've never.
Oh.
My game is just in the police.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's married. He has kids now and the whole nine. So, yeah, the last time I heard from him, I just met my husband. And he sent a text like, hey, what's up? I want to come see you, you know, blah, blah, blah. I was like, well, here's the thing. Kind of in a relationship now, so that won't work.
That's not happening.
That's not happening. So, but I saw him. I'd seen him earlier that year anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd seen him earlier that year before I even got into a relationship. So yeah. Wow. Interesting. Interesting. So let me ask you this, Breezy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find it easier now that you're an adult, to talk to your parents about anything now?
Truth be told, I've never found it easy to talk to my parents ever. With me, so I've mentioned this before on the show a couple times. So I'm adopted. So the family that I speak of,
right,
that's my family. I don't say adopted family. That's a slap in the face. That's my family.
Absolutely.
You know,
like I don't use the word stepdad. That's my dad.
Yeah. I have met my biological mom, the person who gave birth to me. Never met my dad. He had died about 12 years before.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, how do I say this? The whole, you know, the whole nature versus nurture thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have a connection with my parents, obviously, but never really felt, like, comfortable enough in my own skin to talk to them about certain things. I say this, I'm from Denver, and that's the place I consider home.
Mm-hmm.
But I left there and lived different places. But, like, that's the place that, like, brings me joy. You know,
mm-hmm.
like, when I go back to visit, I feel at home.
Okay.
So right now I'm kind of like a person without a home. You know, I mean, I lived in Atlanta for 12 years. It was cool. I never really liked it. You know, so I only feel comfortable. So a lot of times, you know, with my parents, like growing up, that's too that they told me I was adopted. That's trying to like, you know, not, I guess, like kind of skirt around the subject.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing that I saw. And then, like, you know, when I started coming of age, so having my own likes, dislikes, and everything, my own opinion about things, which are different from theirs, and then it comes, well, you know, we don't know why you're so different from us. And I'm like, well, damn, why would I talk to you? No, why would I talk to you now? And I'm not trying to say, I'm not sure that's trying to say, well, yeah, get another guy from them.
Mm-hmm.
So at times, I never felt like a lot of times, you know, especially growing up, you know, my parents would indirectly tell me how I should feel being adopted. Like, that's impossible. You can never tell somebody how they should feel about being adopted. Or I can never tell you how to feel about being a biological sibling.
Right.
I know how it is.
Right.
You know, so stuff like that lets the seed. So, like, well, you know, well, I don't think my opinion is going to be heard then. You know what I'm saying? I don't think my feeling, because I know how I feel being adopted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know how I feel. You know, and like, you know, even when we left, you know, because my biological family is in Denver. And so I think for my parents, like, Denver kind of represents, like, kind of like a, not forbidden, but I'm not sure if they feel nervous, like, whenever I go back to Denver to visit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not going to leave you all, you know. I'm not going to desert you all and thrust myself into them, but I am going to have a relationship with them.
Right.
You know, so, yeah, so it's a lot of times where I just didn't feel comfortable, you know, or on the same, you know, wavelength.
Okay.
Just because of, you know, and then one thing, too, they both come from families of 11, so they will have, you know, one mindset that's completely different from mine. I don't know how this. You know, then especially when I met my siblings, well, this is how you should do. Yeah, that's fine if I already have my siblings, but you can't tell somebody what they should do when they first meet this. You know what I'm saying? So a lot of times that's why I don't feel comfortable talking to them about certain things, because what their upbringing has taught them, that's what they try to force upon me. Now, they're on art, and they know that art's completely different.
Right.
So, you know, while it may be good advice, it's not good advice for me. Yeah, if that makes sense.
Got it. B-Rob. Do you find it easier now to talk to your mom about certain things, certain issues, now that you're an adult? You know, you have your own opinion, different things like that. So do you find it easier now to talk to your mom about things?
I don't think that it's easier. I think that because of who I am, because I'm very transparent and I'm a little bit more forward-thinking in my thoughts, that I address certain things. You know, that, you know, maybe that my mom isn't as confident. My mom said to me on a couple of times when we've had some deep conversations, let me stop and let me say this. You both know that I have a loud personality.
Right.
And I am also very aggressive.
Right.
Tone it down.
I'm agreeing.
Tone it down, bird of the same feather. Okay. And so my mom is, while I looked up to my mom because my mom, I feel like she did a dang thing. You know what I'm saying? So she created the person that I am. So when I talk about things, my mom is very traditional. So when I talk about things that are a little bit more progressive, she's like, oh, you're so brave, and I don't know that I would do that. Or when we talk about religion,
is she throwing up the holy water on you?
She said a couple of times, don't judge me. You don't know what my relationship is with Christ.
True.
She's absolutely right.
Absolutely right.
But I'm not talking to her, you know, like trying to judge her. It's maybe I got a revelation or my practices or me saying, okay, so how much of this complaining are we going to do? Because if this is what you're going to do, then I can't talk to you right now. Because if we're believers, then there's a certain way of thinking that we should have. And you thinking this way, I can't be a part of this conversation. She gets offended. Now it's, you can't judge me and you don't know my relationship. It's not that I'm judging you. I'm just telling you where I am. We're on two different levels.
So, another thing too with me, my reluctance, you know, my particularly my mom, she comes from that old school, children should be seen and not heard. So if someone I say something that is not, that she doesn't like, she'll say shut up or she'll hang up on me, which is fine with me. Then she'll call me back. I'm ready to go about my business. Come on, you know, oh, I don't want to hear that. Or are you being disrespectful? No, and I told my mom one time, I said, you know, I've been through a lot of things, right? She's like, yeah, you've been through things. I've never been through and everything. I just want to know how you stay so calm and cool about things. I said, well, you know that, believe it or not, I can teach you some things too. Oh, no, can't no parent learn from their child.
Okay. Well, I look
wait,
kids
what?
All the time.
Okay. Yeah. I said, no, you can't say, can't no parent learn from their child?
Who said that?
My mother. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. She don't say that now, though.
She only had to say that one time. I haven't said it, you know, and I haven't said it back again to her since then, which segues way into another taboo, mental health.
Mm-hmm.
It's very taboo. It's just as taboo, if not as finances.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was in Denver, no, I was living in Germany. My parents didn't tell me until I was an adult by this point. One of my teachers had pulled my parents to the side. It's like, well, you know, your son exhibits sign of ADHD.
Yeah.
Well, I had most parents, okay, you know, thinking, everything. Caught thinking, oh, it's just a phase. It's not black parents. It's just a phase. They're growing. Shit hasn't gotten better. So I didn't know that. And I actually worked in mental health, and my boss was like, no, you exhibit these signs. So you should get, you know, the test. It's like, unfortunately, you can't do it here because you work here, big conflict of interest.
Right.
He said, but I can, refer to somebody. And I went, and it was diagnosed. And so, that weekend, I went to visit my parents. I lived in Athens, Georgia. And I went to parents, visit my parents for a weekend. And just, me and my pops watched a college football and a couple of beers. I was talking to him about what I found out. He's like, I'm like, He's like, yeah, one of your teachers told us about this when you were like 3 or 4.
3 or 4?
Yeah, I'm like, okay.
What did y'all do?
Nothing. And then nothing. Now, I was a little teased when they told me that, because just being able to, concentrate on a singular thought or singular one thing, mm-hmm. I think I'll probably be a lot further than I am in some of my endeavors right now.
Yeah.
So I was kind of like, well, because you all tried. Oh, this is a phase, And so I do think that, that is also taboo. I mean, I have some other cousins that, have a mental diagnosis. Oh, that's just a phase. Everyone needs that medication. Ain't nothing wrong with them. Or you have acting out. Give them a spake. My business is ass down there. Like that's a cure-all for everything.
It's a cure-all for something.
Yeah, a cure-all for something. But, but I mean, if he's, bipolar, or actually really have ADHD, we bounce off the wall, it may take a little more than just a spanking.
True.
So I do believe that is something. I remember my father telling my grandmother, she had a psychotic break, and there was times where she would go up to the what they call the hospital for a couple of, you know, weeks here and there, mm-hmm. and then of course you know kids neighborhood season and everything. So I don't know. I'm not sure what the diagnosis was. And so maybe that's.
You know what? Shut up. Shut it up.
Okay, no.
So I don't. I think that probably stayed on my father's mind when it came on to me. You know, because he didn't. You know, like you know, kids calling his mom crazy, teasing him. So maybe he wouldn't like somebody telling him that his son's crazy. Not that ADD is crazy, but when he had mental health for some reason. For most black folks, it is crazy. ADD, crazy. Unless you're in the know.
Right.
You know, bipolar, crazy.
Well, bipolar, you are crazy.
All I'm saying is...
That doesn't mean that you're crazy.
No,
little bit.
No, but what I'm saying is, like, everything's under the umbrella of crazy.
That doesn't mean that you're crazy.
Little bit.
No, it doesn't.
Little bit.
And so I was pretending to my...
Little bit.
Okay, I'm thinking about somebody.
Little bit.
Yeah.
Little
okay.
Bit.
Okay.
Well, I'm just saying, like, how everything's on a, you know, OCD. Well, that boy's crazy.
Well, a
you
little bit. Some of it's a little bit crazy.
My OCD is a little bit crazy.
What I'm saying is everything
well,
is under the umbrella.
You know, why black people think that things are you okay?
A little bit.
Why would black people think that something is different, that people are crazy? It's not that it's crazy. This is different. And I'm going to give an example. Of course, you know my kids are adopted. So when
I applaud you.
Thank you, because I don't know which is worse, having a baby or adopting a child. I don't know, because I never had the opportunity to get a child from birth.
Right.
But I know when you adopt a child, you have to start counseling, especially when you adopt through CPS, Child Protective Services.
Really?
Yes. You have to start counseling. My now 16-year-old, my husband adopted him when he was 7. And so by the age of 7, being that he was the oldest out of all of his biological mom's children, he was the adult in the house. So at 7 years old, he was babysitting, he was changing diapers, he was mixing formula. He was taking care of kids by 7 years old. And by 7 years old, he had already experienced his biological mom trying to kill herself. He witnessed it. She tried trying to slice her throat, and she tried hanging herself. And she didn't succeed either time. But my 7-year-old saw these things. So he immediately had to undergo counseling. And when his last counseling session in Texas was right before we left. So now here we are. Now when we moved here, we had to start looking for a counselor and different things, but do that whole thing because it's a continuous process. So now what we're starting to do with my now 9-year-old, even though he was a baby when my husband adopted him, there are certain things about my 9-year-old that I don't like. A lot of things about my 9-year-old that I don't like. And when you have kids, you tend to do a lot of research, especially when you have kids that are adopted, because there are certain things you don't know about their family lineage or anything like that. So I'm finding that my child does certain things I'm thinking he's doing just to piss me off. No, he's probably doing it because his mom had issues when she was giving birth, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some issues there. So it's like now we're saying, okay, we got to get this boy some help because there are certain, like, he's smart, but there are some type of learning things that I hate that about him, you know. So there are certain things that we've been teaching
him. Hate is such a strong word.
No, hate's a good word. It's the word that I'm looking for.
But he doesn't hate the child. He hates these particular things.
Right. I don't hate my kids.
All I said was hate is such a strong word.
And
that's
I wanted to say, my vocabulary is very extensive. So I want to use hate.
Choose another one.
I don't want to.
Choose another one.
Detest.
Thank you. That's
same
much
thing.
Better.
Why? Because it's in the Bible?
Because hate is such a strong word.
So, I detest some of the learning things that I'm still having to teach him, things that we've been teaching him since second grade, is like he's still not getting. But you can remember every damn song that comes on the radio.
Easy.
Well, yeah, I know there's a study, and music helps. And
we tried that.
Well, with what? I mean, you know what? What you're doing, that's going to be a lifelong thing because of what was done obviously before.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be a lifelong thing.
It is. It is definitely a lifelong thing, and that's why I said some people think being a parent is done, it's finished with when your child turns 18. No.
Yeah, because you could be 34 and still need it.
Mm-hmm. I still need my daddy and my mom, especially my dad, because there's certain things about children. I'm like, hey, y'all need to come get this y'all grandkid because I'm about to be admitted to the crazy house. They're getting on my damn nerves.
Everything gets on your
nerves. Everything does get on my nerves.
You know, I, one thing for me, I internalize things a lot, and which, you know, no secret to you, but because I didn't have any, you know, another person to speak to, you know, one thing I can assume with having siblings, I mean, you all can tell me if I'm wrong or not, but I can assume that, you know, there may be a thing or two that you don't feel like you can speak to your parents about, which you may be able to speak to your sibling about. Well, I didn't have that. I didn't internalize that.
Right, because you were only child.
And then growing up in Denver, where it's snow, it's not like, you know, I can, you know, just go in the room, you know, but, you know. And so I do think that some of that, you know, does feed into, you know, my ADD, because I want to say something, but I can't.
Why?
Hmm?
Why?
What do you mean, why?
Why can't you say something?
I don't feel comfortable. And like even my parents, like, they're like, oh, you're so secretive. No, I'm not. I'm not.
Yes,
I'm private. No, I'm not. I mean, it's just certain things I just cannot. One that I did tell them, and this was the same conversation when I told my father I was diagnosed with ADD. And I was like, oh, yeah, you know. I said, and I sweated bullets and telling them this other thing. I was like, yeah, talking. I was like, yeah, also, I cut myself. You know, oh, ain't nothing wrong with me. No. Look.
So you told your parents.
I told my father.
You told your father that you cut yourself.
Yeah, he said, ain't
and he
wrong.
Said, ain't nothing wrong
ain't
with
wrong
you.
There. I was like, no, look.
What are you doing?
Crazy. See, that's my, but I'm not suicidal. And trust me, and having worked in mental health, I got all that. I'm not suicidal. I internalize a lot of things. I'm not the most, you know, emotionally expressive. I'm very stoic. And so first time it happened, that's like a way to, like, this is like me crying, right? Like, this is like me releasing. And so whenever I done it, it was just me, like, just like the world lifted off my shoulders. So I'm not suicidal at all.
Right.
This is like tears for me. This is like,
your
you
outlet.
Know, my outlet. And
like
I just couldn't understand that. I'm like, well, it looked like y'all were the most open to speak to. And I had no one, you know, to speak to. So now with me still struggling with ADD, I don't blame them. Now I'm an adult now. Now it's all on me. But sometimes I think, like, well, man, this was, you know, nipped in the bud at 4.
So what do you do now?
And this is it. Because of my current situation, I haven't taken my medication in some time.
You wait, Scott. Skirt.
So I took my medication and I about
what it cost.
What's your last relationship?
A year ago.
Yeah, so that's why.
What's the cost?
Quick insurance that I don't have now on the job, $40.
Let's talk.
So, yeah. But it's on me now. You know?
Yeah, I know it's on you,
it's on me
but
now.
Without your medication, how do you deal? What are you doing?
It's hard. Like my mind, it's a five lane highway, 1,000 cars. So a lot of times when I talk fast, it's like different ideas. I jump around a lot. I jump around a lot. I may say start something here, maybe say something, and so sometimes I say it all at the same time. Now that's my mind. Like it doesn't shut down. Like it's a highway of 1,000 cars and zooming by.
Mm.
And so when I am on my kitchen, it kind of slows down from 1,000 cars to like 10 cars. That way I can eat them more. I'm easily able to focus on one of those 10 things. And so, you know, my one of my aunts, she's a nurse. And so, I've been working in the medical field. You know, she's understanding. But some of my other aunts and uncles, boy, that thing ain't passed yet. That thing ain't passed yet.
The nurse says this?
No, some of my other aunts and uncles.
Oh, that's the aunt to nurse. Okay.
And like, that thing ain't passed. That thing ain't talking about. Again, because something is not a big deal. It's a passing phase, you know. And I think that's one thing, you know. And that and coping skills, I think, is a taboo. No one wants to have, you know, a sick, you know, a child or a spouse. Someone wants to have a crazy, you know, a child or spouse. And so, oh, it'll be all right. No, it's not going to be all right. Some things don't pass.
Right.
You know, I'm going out of the hyper part of ADHD. But the ADD part is still there.
Wow. Okay.
It's like Phil Donahue. Okay.
You know, you try to find the right words because you don't want to say the wrong word. Because I've been accused of saying the wrong thing a time or two. So it's just one of those kind of things. How much time do we have left, Dee?
We're over.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it's 9:45, man.
The little lady didn't talk in my head.
Because I have it on the extend version.
Oh.
Just in case the conversation got extremely good.
Got it.
And wanted to continue on. So.
Okay. Whew.
You can close it out.
Okay. Well, friends, it was real. It was nice. I enjoyed the conversation. You all can go back and go through the archives and listen in. If you didn't get a chance to catch tonight's show. So I will see you all next week. Until then, peace.
And you all have a Merry Christmas soon.
Right.
All right.
Hi,
peace.